From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, September 24th, 2018. And on this day, what Mainers are thinking about the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation process, and what may be behind the big drop in car-moose collisions. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Dozens of people in Portland this morning to present a letter to Senator Susan Collins asking her not to vote to confirm Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. That's until sexual assault allegations against him are investigated. The letter was written on a large poster board and signed by Maine survivors of sexual assault and their supporters. It was presented to a member of Collins' staff at her office in downtown Portland. The protest was organized by Mainers for Accountable Leadership and the national women's group Ultraviolet Action. It's part of an ongoing campaign to pressure Collins to vote against Kavanaugh, who's now been accused, as we've heard, of sexual assault by two women. Also today, dozens of protesters also arrested outside Collins' office in Washington, D.C. And as more allegations surface and the future of Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination remains up in the air, we have three perspectives on what all this means. Julie Longwa-Peterson is Associate Professor of Psychology and Program Director of Women's and Gender Studies at the University of New England. Christine Thibault is an Assistant District Attorney for Cumberland County. And Ron Schmidt is Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Maine. He told Maine Calling's Jennifer Rooks the biggest concern for him is what the legacy of this hearing means for the court itself.
Hamilton, all the way back in the Federalist Papers, talked about how the court had a problem among our institutions because it doesn't have the power of the purse like Congress or the power of the sword like the executive branch. There was a lot of concern right from the beginning, therefore, about upholding the perceived legitimacy of the court, of the idea that it was a neutral institution that wasn't political. And that has been frayed, let me put it that way, in the last, I guess, since Bush v. Gore, really. Particularly because Congress is so hopelessly polarized right now between the parties that a lot of issues, a lot of fights that I think probably should be happening in Congress are winding up being kicked down the street to the court. I heard, I think it was Senator Orrin Hatch say last week that he wants to hear from Dr. Blasey Ford, but that he can't see how his opinion on Brett Kavanaugh would be changed. And to me, that suggests that an incredibly important decision about the composition of the court is being made with an eye towards a partisan lens, and there's less and less of an attempt to pretend that that's not what's happening. And I think that's bad for the court, and I think it's bad for our politics.
Julie, as a psychology and gender studies professor, what are you thinking about right now?
Yeah, I think two main thoughts that I have at the moment are, you know, I've been asking myself and asking my colleagues, you know, their thoughts on whether we need an external investigation by the FBI into the accusations made by Blasey Ford. And I think one of the reasons I'm so interested in this question has to do with the literature and the science behind judgment and decision making. And given that senators on both sides of the aisle have expressed pretty openly that their opinions, whether it is we either don't believe or don't care what Dr. Blasey Ford has to say because we want to push Kavanaugh through, or we believe Dr. Blasey Ford, that those sort of decisions already made are going to impact their ability to know what questions to ask during the hearing, to, you know, accurately and without bias evaluate the information. You know, I do think an external body that is investigating these claims and this aspect or this side of Justice Kavanaugh's past is important and integral to the process of decision making and should hopefully provide more information both for the general public and for lawmakers. And then the second part of it, I think, which is more that sort of women and gender studies hat that I also wear, is, you know, people's reactions to the allegations made by Dr. Blasey Ford and then this additional woman, Ramirez, you know, the skepticism and the slate of questions that we almost always hear. Why didn't why didn't she report earlier? Or she is, you know, after power, after money, and sort of unpacking where those kind of claims or skeptics come from, or those skeptic thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And Christine Thibeau, bringing you into the conversation as a prosecutor, how are you looking at all of this?
Well, as a juvenile prosecutor, I spend most of my time trying to debunk myths about kids and the trouble they may get into. And a lot of kids think, well, what I do as a juvenile doesn't really matter because it all just mysteriously disappears when I turn 18. And so this case is a little bit unusual because it's showing that there are very real consequences to conduct that you may engage in as a teenager. And to follow up on what Julie was saying about the why wasn't this reported sooner? And we're talking about an incident, at least one incident that occurred 36 years ago and the other a little more recently. But what we know about teenagers, victims, they do not think of police as problem solvers. They don't report incidents to law enforcement and often not even to authorities within their school. A lot of teens, especially I think girls, feel a great deal of shame and they don't share this information. That is not at all unusual. On the other hand, we have a situation where a person, Judge Kavanaugh, engaged in behavior when he was young. And typically, our juvenile justice system is designed to address those behaviors, but not have it destroy a person's lives. And we've sort of missed that opportunity here to address that alleged bad behavior in a meaningful way that brings the victim some healing, but also allows the offender to better choices in life and overcome that.
One of the big questions, and we've touched on this a little bit, is this call to have the FBI investigate. I think when the first accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, said, I want to testify, but only after an FBI investigation, that surprised a lot of people, and people are sort of processing that. Why would someone want an FBI investigation, and do you think it's a good idea?
Well, I guess it depends on what the FBI is charged with investigating. If they're charged with investigating what happened on that given night, I would suggest that they may be able to find people who corroborate one side or the other, and that may be useful information. But to get at what really happened and, you know, who was there and what should be done about it, the FBI doesn't investigate criminal matters of that nature, even for adults. And so when you overlay the fact that these were adolescents, and I don't believe that the FBI is probably very well schooled in adolescent development and why a person may not report a crime which allegedly was pretty serious, I'm not sure the FBI is really the right bureau to be investigating this claim for for truth of the matter.
That's Christine Thibeau, Assistant District Attorney for Cumberland County. Julie Longo-Peterson, Associate Professor of Psychology and Program Director of Women's and Gender Studies at the University of New England. And Ron Schmidt, Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Maine. They spoke with Maine Calling's Jennifer Rooks. Today's the first day of moose season in northern and eastern Maine, and hundreds of hunters are expected to take part over the next 6 days. The hunt's divided into four segments and continues by region around Maine until the third week in November. Last year, more than 1,500 hunters harvested a moose. Data from the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife show the moose population in Maine is holding steady. And as Susan Sharon reports, moose car collisions around the state are way down.
Not only are collisions with moose down, as first reported by the Portland Press-Herald, but they're down dramatically over the last 15 or 20 years, says IFNW moose biologist Lee Cantor.
There was a high point for moose collisions back around the year 2000, and there's been a downward trend in those collisions from that point on.
Data from the Maine Department of Transportation showed that last year there were 287 car moose crashes. That compares to nearly 650 a decade earlier. Cantor says there are several reasons to explain the downward trend, including fewer moose in certain parts of the state because of calf mortality caused by winter ticks, but also because of steps taken by the DOT to cut back vegetation for better visibility and to identify high strike areas.
The Department of Transportation has done a great job with getting the word out over the last 18 years, as well as dealing with particularly bad sites. But, you know, in general, and people are saying this up north here, I mean, moose in the far north are pretty stable and doing fine. And then there's other areas of the state where in the last few years it's been tough on calves.
Aroostook County is the area with the highest number of moose collisions, according to the DOT, close to 2,000 of them between 2005 and 2014.
The first one was in, I think, October of 2008. Second one was in probably November of 2013, and then this one was June of 18.
Chase Jackson of Allagash is talking about his three separate collisions with three different moose. But if that sounds frightening, his dad, State Senator Troy Jackson, has hit five moose in his travels to and from the State House. Other members of the Jackson family have also had their share of crashes with moose. Fortunately, none of them has been hurt. But the same cannot be said of the moose, who are often just a short walk away from the safety of the woods.
That last collision I was in, I think the moose probably died in about 2 or 3 minutes. And you know, it was one of those things where if it had been in the daytime, I would have been able to see it much sooner. But by the time it came into my field of vision at all, it was just right in front of me and there was no stopping for it.
Jackson says it was a gory scene and upsetting to sit alone in the dark in his wrecked car waiting for state police to arrive. When a trooper did show up, Jackson says they recognized each other from his previous moose accident. It turns out that the trooper, too, had been in three separate moose collisions. Jackson says where he lives, these accidents are so common that people often don't bother to share the news when they occur. Data show fatalities from moose collisions are also down, so state officials are hoping the trend continues. Maine's IFNW is currently in the midst of an extensive multi-year study to examine factors affecting moose reproduction and survival. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, September 24th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.